Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Dalla Alfueres. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you. You said that perfectly.
Well, thank you. I have a few years of practice, which is not something that I tend to talk about much anymore, but I did spend over a decade of my professional life working in the Middle East.
Oh.
And I haven't spoken much Arabic in the past 10 years, but, you know, 10 years before that, it was something I did a lot of. But our interview is going to be in English, and I'm glad you're here.
Well, if you ever need practice.
Right, I obviously already do. So, Dalla, you're the principal of FJI, which is an interior design firm here in the Valley. Tell us a little bit about your work and how you're serving folks.
Sure. So, FJI is a hospitality interior design firm with a sweet spot for food and beverage interiors. So that's bars, restaurants, coffee shops, really anything that services the food and beverage industry. I've been in the hospitality industry for about 12 years, but have owned my business for 2.5 years. A lot of our work is local to the greater Phoenix Valley, but we are starting to explore projects in California and Kuwait.
Yeah, excellent. And you're from Kuwait. You were born in Kuwait.
Yes.
And how long did you live there before you moved away?
So I was born in Kuwait, but actually raised on the island of Bahrain or the Kingdom of Bahrain. I did finish out high school in Kuwait and then moved to the U.S. for college. So I've been here for about 17 years now. So I would say half my life was spent in the U.S. and the other half in the Middle East.
So two little countries in the Persian Gulf.
Yes.
What took you, obviously your family, you had family connections in both Kuwait and Bahrain?
Wow, you said Bahrain very well too. So my dad is from Kuwait and he moved to Bahrain for business. So did my mom. She was a broadcaster on Bahrain TV and Bahrain Radio. So I guess that's what took us to Bahrain. And then when the invasion hit in 91, is when we moved back to Kuwait.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. I want to talk about that for a minute, if that's okay.
Sure.
August 2nd, 1990.
Yes.
Saddam Hussein's armies invaded Kuwait in the middle of the night.
Yes.
We all learned about it the next day.
Yes.
Right? How old were you in 1990?
I was seven years old.
And you were living in Kuwait with your family, in Kuwait City, obviously.
Well, actually, we were living in Bahrain still, but my dad had business trips and he would take us from time to time. And on this particular trip, he decided, I'm going to take my girls with me. And so my dad and I were staying at a hotel and I actually woke up early morning around 4 a.m., looked out the window and could see the army burning things down. Iraqi army, yeah. Yes. And we were, 20th or 30th level of the hotel. And I could see this happening. And I shook my dad and said, what's happening outside? And he said, just go back to sleep. And then we actually got a call in the hotel room from the lobby warning us of what has happened. And
yeah. I mean, in a way that invasion took the world by surprise. Not because Saddam Hussein, then president of Iraq, had kept it a secret, but because nobody had actually believed him. in hindsight, it was a moment in the history of the Middle East when, in fact, the Middle East kind of rocketed to the international scene because just the year before had been the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Soviet Empire, and it was all of a sudden an era without superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the topic of today's show, but it's interesting that, you know, in that moment, Saddam Hussein judged that his dispute with Kuwait over oil, over the debt from his war with Iran, all of these things, he could go settle that score and nobody would care.
Right.
When, ironically, 4 days later, the Security Council resolution was passed that imposed sanctions on Iraq that lasted for almost 13 years.
Right.
And people cared a lot.
Yes.
So there you were, caught up in this really interesting, fascinating, at least interesting to me and those of us, you know, with connections to the region. And you're 7 years old.
Yes.
How did that play out? I mean, it was the next year before the coalition military came and quote unquote liberated Kuwait.
Right.
How did things go for you from that moment?
Ah, gosh. So it was, I think, 7 or 8 months that we lived through the war, but it was terrifying at times. But there were other times where it was actually pretty comforting because we were around family. I recall certain snippets of things that just stick out in my mind because I was so young. The most prominent one was probably us getting out of the hotel and slowly making our way to our family's house where my sister, my aunts, my cousins were all located. And that took us about a week. We had to stop at little hotels on the way. That was terrifying. Another incident that sticks out is my cousin and I were playing around, as cousins do, and he hit me with a lunchbox. And the lunchbox opened up and the hinge cut my head open. And so we rushed to the hospital, which was occupied by the army, and they wouldn't let us in. And I needed stitches, very obviously so. And they wouldn't let us in. The best they could do was throw a bottle of some sort of ointment that I could put on the wound. And yeah, and we went back home, and that's what we did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy period of time. After the liberation of Kuwait, obviously there was a period of rebuilding and so on. And then Iraq's trajectory plays out in a very different way. Mm. One of the things that I remember from time that I spent living in Jordan, in starting in 1994, moving forward, there was a lot of folks from Kuwait, especially non-Kuwaitis, but the Palestinians and many others who relocated. It's this funny thing, this conflict, and I'm curious how this connects to your business today, because at some level, we have to talk about hospitality in more than just a kind of simplistic way. Mm-hmm. But this conflict and of course, a longstanding tradition in the desert of hospitality in the Arab countries, it probably plays a role in the way you think about your business. And I'd be fascinated to learn
a little about that. Like a therapy session because I actually never thought about that. But you know quite a bit about history. I don't know if I shared this with you, but I am half Palestinian. And so my mom being Palestinian and the Palestinians being kicked out of Kuwait after the invasion was a very odd thing for our mixed family.
Yes.
My grandparents had already relocated from Kuwait to London, so we never really had to experience the pain of being kicked out, per se. But yes, it was very real. We know a lot of people that who called Kuwait home that could no longer call it home.
Well, and this is what I find to be so fascinating. So, you know, we live in a world now in 2019 with a lot of displacement, a lot of conversation about immigration, about refugees and things like that. And without getting political, it's important just to recognize that this is a reality of life for people who are experiencing it that is very different than the conversations being had about it. Mm-hmm. Right? There's just two different phenomena. One is you're living through it. The other is you have opinions about it or right. policies about it or laws, etc. One of the things in Jordan, of course, in the mid-90s was that this wave of refugees from Kuwait were treated differently because of the fact that they were sometimes, and this is not fair, but they were often referred to as the five-star refugees because in many cases, the family had more money,
yes.
right, than the 48 or 67 Palestinian refugees living in Jordan. Of course, at the same time, Amman got so much more interesting. And, you know, for me as a young man living in the Middle East, seeing the explosion of restaurants, bars, art galleries, nightlife. There's a very real way in which the contemporary and cosmopolitan nature of Amman is connected to your experience collectively. Mm-hmm. The artists, the intellectuals, the business people, the entrepreneurs. I mean, software startup. So there's a way in which your history here in Phoenix, Arizona, is connected to something that I experienced in the Middle East 20 years ago. Wow. And it's all part of the same phenomenon. So you brought some things with you.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how you ended up in interior design.
Okay.
And connect those dots for me, because I know there's something here. I'm kind of fumbling around to
right.
find it, but there's a story here.
Yes. So I actually didn't realize this until last year, but I came to Phoenix for the interior design program at ASU because it was ranked 4th in the nation. I honestly don't know where my interest in design started, when or where, but I knew I had to do something creative. I saw creativity in my dad, even though he was in finance. He loved changing up our home every so often. So I think I just admired seeing him do that. So fast forward to today, it was actually a couple of months ago that I was thinking, why did I choose food and beverage specifically? I mean, nobody does that. You either do commercial interiors or residential or a little bit of both. You never hone in on that one specific thing. But it really is about the moment that we're sitting around a table, enjoying a meal, having a good conversation. I want to replicate that over and over and over again, because those are my best memories from childhood, sitting around a table, having conversation, lunch, dinner, and breakfast, really. I mean, that's where connections happen.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating combination of things. You see the world in a unique way, mm-hmm. and you are committed to those conversations, to those connections, to that togetherness. And those things have to happen somewhere. Mm-hmm. So if it's around grandma's table or at an aunt's house or in a restaurant or a bar in Old Town Scottsdale, mm-hmm. you're after something.
Yes.
How do you explain that thing? What is that uniqueness that you're bringing? And how does interior design play a role there?
Yeah, no, good question. So I think that interior design is a lot more than just the aesthetics that you see in a space. It's that sixth sense or the feeling that you can't quite describe, but it's there because it's an accumulation of multiple things. The environment, the sound, the smell, really your five senses being activated at the same time. So that's the approach that we take with design, is how do we get all five senses to be activated so that people are at their peak and just enjoying the moment that they're in.
When somebody has the idea for a restaurant or a bar, mm-hmm. in many cases, they're thinking about a number of things at the same time. They're thinking about the mood. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about the menu. And of course, they're trying to fit their vision into the reality of a particular space and a right location and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. When do you like to come into a project, and how do you support a business owner in helping fulfill on her vision?
Okay. So I would say at the very early stages, even before you've committed to a space, ideally, so that we can help develop a storyline that would allow you to find the perfect framework or space to support that idea that you have. But it's a very interesting question you ask. I think one of the exercises that we do that is pretty unusual for interior design, but when we get started with a client, before we start designing, we actually go through an exercise called a customer journey. Well, let me back up. We actually start with a customer avatar, where we develop the ideal client that they want to have in their restaurant all the time. Without a clear vision of who we're targeting, it's really hard to design, because we can't design for everybody. So once we've developed who that ideal client is, then we'll develop a storyline for an ideal experience. So how do people find out about your restaurant? What happens when they come through the space? How are they greeted? What touch points do they experience from ordering to sitting down to being served? We tell that entire storyline, and then we reverse engineer it and design the space to align with that storyline.
Yeah. I mean, the customer journey or customer experience, the avatar, these are concepts that are commonly bandied about in marketing
yes.
circles.
Yeah.
But to apply them to physical spaces and real human interactions mm-hmm. seems, of course, obvious.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about some of your favorite projects that you've worked on. And how this concept, the avatar, the customer journey, uh-huh. showed up in the design
yeah.
of the space.
Okay. Gosh, I wish I had some time to think about this, but the first one that comes to mind is the White Rabbit, which is a speakeasy in Gilbert. When we found out about the location. It's in the basement of the Heritage Court building in their downtown area, which is, I wouldn't say off the beaten path, but it's in a basement, which is not easy walkable traffic. So we knew we had to have a special catch that really made it a destination. So what we did was we designed a private lounge area with pictures lining the wall from floor to ceiling. But what we did to fill those picture frames was we reached out to the Gilbert community and we said, hey, Gilbert, send us historic photos of your family throughout time here in Gilbert or Greater Phoenix even. Send those to us. We will print them, frame them, and fill this private lounge with these photos. And so we did that. We got awesome photos submitted, framed the walls. And now on opening day, people wanted to be there just so that they could see a part of them on the walls of the space. So there was a sense of ownership where this bar is the community's bar, not just the owner's bar.
I love that. I mean, one of the things that makes a community is the ability to reflect itself back to itself.
Right.
And so you're doing that in a very literal way.
Yeah.
You've gotten some unique approaches in your business. And as you know, as I have no experience in this realm, but I'm fascinated by it. As I was looking at your website, I saw that you organized your services, at least at some level. I'm sure that you each project is customized, but you've divided things into three basic packages. Talk a little bit about how you typically work with folks, and if somebody's listening to you and they think this is amazing, I want to. What would they expect in these three different types of packages? How you do your work with
folks?
Okay,
you're asking really good questions. So, you know, I've found that in our field, we tend to use a lot of jargon that doesn't connect with the client. It's stuff that we use internally that really sounds like garbage to other people. So I really wanted to simplify the process by calling it what it is. So we offer three packages, basic, enhanced, and premium. And you could pick and choose. You want all three, you want one, whatever works for you. Every business is in a different place. And so they should have options that cater to them. In the basic package, what we provide is concept development. So in a nutshell, that's designing the space, giving them a photorealistic 3D rendering of the space, and they can do with it as they please. With the enhanced, we're giving you a conceptual rendering as well as construction documents, which we can use to submit to the city and then get a general contractor to bid out and then build out the space. And then with the premium, it's the two I mentioned earlier, along with procurement services. So that is selecting furniture and purchasing it on behalf of the client. Furniture, art, accessories, all the movable things within the space.
Yeah. So does someone need to have a location for basic to even work? Or is it really kind of location-independent concept for a rough square footage or something?
Both, actually. So there are times where people are developing a concept, but they don't quite know what square footage they need to attain to bring that concept to life. That's where we can help with square footage calculations. Or on the flip side, you could have chains that want to develop the ideal footprint before they start shopping for locations, whether that be inline or end cap, et cetera.
It seems to me like this kind of partnership with the business owner, with the person holding the vision for the business, is essential. And obviously this, you could answer this in a very self-serving way, but I'm sure you'll give us a real sense into this. What sorts of solutions are you providing that people might not actually realize they needed? In other words, they might think, well, I need a designer to make things look good, but I'm sure it goes way beyond that. Why are your services so essential to somebody in that conceptualization phase?
Yes. So it's the experience. I mean, beyond aesthetics, it's how people feel about your space. It's the language they use to share with other people so that they become your walking billboard and they tell all their friends about you. It's that. We want to capture that emotion. And I think that's more than just the physical space. So that's the music you hear. I mean, we oftentimes put together a playlist based on the project, and we'll play it on the day of the presentation so that we have the vibe or the feel of the space happening in the background as we present the concept to them.
There's something that I've been fascinated by as a bit of a nerd. I grew up in a radio station, so I've always been sensitive to the sound mm-hmm. of a space. And most people don't realize how much sound design plays a role in the entertainment that they're consuming.
Right.
And a quick example of this is if, you know, a horror movie stops being scary the moment you turn the volume down.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing in the visuals that's creating the energy and tension
right.
of the film. It's all in the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So there are dimensions of our human experience that we take for granted, but that are very important in shaping how we feel, how we act. We tend to like the idea that we're these autonomous, free-thinking, free-choosing creatures, and we don't realize how much of our behavior is a response to the physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
A crazy example, I don't remember the details of this study, where it was done and whatnot, but a study was done on undergraduates, because that's how most studies are done. It's a willing population that wants credit or money. come in, right?
Yeah.
And they were given tests that measured creativity.
Okay.
And it was a random selection of the student body. And, you know, they did all the right kind of things. The only difference between the control group and the experimental group was mm-hmm. the height of the ceiling
mm-hmm.
in the room that they took the test.
Okay.
And the students who took the creativity test in a room with really high ceilings
uh-huh.
scored much higher on the measure of creativity.
Interesting.
In other words, it's not the person, it's the space
okay.
that has a determining factor. And they're just with thousands of students, and so statistically valid, et cetera. So we take for granted the way in which we interact with the environment around us. And of course, right now here in my studio, we're sitting in a room with fairly high ceilings, but it's horrible fluorescent lights mm-hmm. and you know, commercial carpet and things like that. Does this just rub the designer in you the wrong way to be in a room like this?
No, I'm never judgmental, ever.
Well, that's very kind of you, but this is a functional room. We've got yes. soundproof curtains on one wall.
Exactly.
We've got sound panels all around us. I mean, it's a radio station chic.
It serves its purpose.
How do you think about that balance of function and form? How do you think of that balance of the aesthetics versus the experience?
Right. Oh, gosh. So do you want me to talk about specific to the food and beverage industry or design in general?
Well, the thing that you're most passionate about, whichever of those two would give you the
sure.
give us the most fun conversation.
So it's interesting that you bring up acoustics, but recently I've seen a lot of buzz and articles on how it is becoming too loud at restaurants. Because we've moved in this design direction of going with concrete floors and exposed ceilings, which means there's really no sound absorption happening. Just a fun tidbit.
It's very shiny.
To share. Yes.
Well, I mean, there is a co-working space here in town that every time I attend, I try to mention to someone how difficult it is to be in the environment, especially if there's a talk and you're wanting
right.
to listen. I won't mention any names because they are aware of the challenge. But yes, a very shiny room with lots of reflective
yes.
surfaces, lots of reverb.
Yes.
It's painful sometimes to listen to.
Yes. So one of my first questions would be, who is the target demographic? Because based on the demographic, we will take a different approach with design. I think millennials and younger crowds like activity, like sound, like just the feeling and seeing the energy, whereas someone 35 plus or 40 plus likes more of a controlled environment. And this is not always true, but this is generally what we've seen with our demographic targets.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, you started FGI in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that moment when you decided to take a leap from working in someone else's company to starting your own. And how did that play out? What was it like for you to start this business?
Well, anyone that has started a business knows that it's the scariest jump. But once you do jump, then you just keep going because it's survival. So actually, I had no plans to start my own business. I was working for an architect in town and I helped him start a design department. And I thought, great, this is the peak of my career. But unfortunately, the architect got sick with leukemia. He is recovering now, so that's good. But because of his illness, he had to shut down the firm. And I was left with no job. But it was also very challenging for me to find a comparable job because of the position that I held. So my husband, actually, and a good friend, Dr. Brad, said, hey, you just started a design department for someone else. You could probably do this yourself. And so they planted the seed and I started thinking about it and I decided, okay, I'll do this. And I had no clients whatsoever the day that I decided I would. But I reached out to everybody in the community, and within a week, thankfully, I had 5 projects on my plate.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
As your business has evolved, obviously the economy's been good during this time frame. The business expansion in the Valley has been phenomenal during that time frame. Food and beverage industry is obviously an area with a lot of activity. What are some of the interesting trends that you've observed being adjacent to some of the larger business trends? What's been happening, and where is this headed? What's your sense of that?
Yeah, lots of little things. But I think what I've noticed lately in this year in particular is a lot of restaurants outside of the state, smaller local chains out of California, even Mexico, are moving to Arizona. And that's a really great sign for our food and beverage scene. I mean, you know, when I moved here in 2001, we were not a foodie city.
Right.
But in 2019, I think we can comfortably say we have a pretty good market. And I think it's just going to become more competitive as more people move to the city. And we are growing rapidly. So I would say out of state, restaurant groups moving their hubs to Arizona.
Yeah. Does that make, I mean, obviously up for the challenge, but does it make it more challenging with so many new starts, so many new openings? You're constantly probably being asked for something unique, something different. I like what they're doing over there, but I want it to be something else.
Yes.
As the industry itself gets, you know, more dynamic, more vibrant, it also gets more competitive, and it's harder, I don't know, I'm projecting, maybe it's not hard, to find the unique concept, the interesting approach. How do you deal with that, with each new client wanting something unique?
Right. So actually, I would argue that a lot of the requests we get is based on the success of other businesses in the Valley. So people see successful businesses and say, we want to replicate that. And that's understood. Replicating their model is great, but I'm always trying to push for being your own self. Let's create something so unique that it draws traffic and you become the new Sam Fox, for lack of a better comparison. He's built a wonderful business, and I think there's opportunity for many more people to do the same.
So do you find yourself then, sounds like, encouraging more uniqueness, more differentiation?
Yes.
Not just, well, that works, I want that, but in this area.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I can see how terrifying it can be doing something new and unique. You're not sure if it's going to work or not, but I really do encourage it.
And when you go for uniqueness, what are some of the typical places that you look? I mean, for me, in my consulting practice, I'm often working with business owners to uncover the unique dimensions of their personal story.
Uh-huh.
That's something we spent the first 10 minutes of our interview talking about.
Yes.
And the ways in which your experience in Kuwait and Bahrain and the UK and then the US has shaped a bit of how you approach things. In designing spaces, where do you look for uniqueness? Are you looking at the owner's story? Or are you looking at their concept, at their vision, at the community? I mean, it's probably yes and
yes,
to all of them.
It is yes and, yes. Well, I'll give you an example. Today, I had a meeting, and it was a local restaurant that has been around for a long time that needs that push to stay in business. And the question is, do we change drastically or do we continue doing what we're doing today? And, you know, one of the ideas was, let's reach out to those loyal fans that have been coming here for years and years and gather stories from them. Gather stories about why they came here, what their best memories are, and try to reframe those memories in a new environment. And so I think it just depends on the situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. The success or failure of any bar or restaurant is dependent so much on the community, on, you know, people embracing it as a place they want to frequent, as something they want to tell their friends about. And, you know, and so much of the time we're talking about the actual food, the beverages, the staff experience that you have with people. But there's something to the vibe, right? There's something to the mood
of
a place that the lighting, the music, the way that the furnishings have all been arranged contributes to or hinders in some way. Have you ever had to troubleshoot a situation where they had a thriving business, but the interior was working against them? Or is that pretty much the situation where you just leave it alone and if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Well, you know, we've seen a pattern where restaurants seem to need to remodel every 6 or 7 years, which sounds about right because that's when trends kind of rise and fall. And so from that aspect, I would say, yes, we do refresh spaces because they start to feel outdated. But if it's refreshed at the right time, then you should be able to stay in business.
Yeah. Where do you get your ideas outside of the industry itself?
Yes.
Where are you drawing creative inspiration from in the world?
So I'll talk about design inspiration first, but Australia, Melbourne, Australia specifically. It, you know, we noticed this pattern last year where every inspirational image that we would pull for a project happened to be in Australia. So we have a goal for this year. If we target or if we hit our revenue goals for the first quarter, then we're taking a design inspiration trip to Australia so that we can see all of this in person. So I would say design-wise, I look to them as being ahead of the game, or at least doing something different that we can learn from. Otherwise, it's food, cooking. I mean, I see art on a plate, and that inspires the environment.
Yeah, you've developed something of a reputation, apparently, for your dinner parties.
Yes.
is this would you say, just the contemporary extension of, you know, mother, grandmother, aunties, that kind of world? Or have you taken it in a new direction?
I think you're right. I never realized that, but that's exactly it. Yes.
Yeah, I'm fascinated having so many business leaders come through and people that I talk to even outside of the Business Radio X context. Very few people are aware of the unique perspective they have on whatever they do.
Yes.
Because for so many of us, we have taken our own past for granted. Mm-hmm. Or it's a source of shame or pain or embarrassment. In any case, we've closed the door for some reason or other. Or we've been told or we've decided somehow that it's not what we're supposed to talk about because we're supposed to be professional and fit into certain molds and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I invariably, there's something that points to a uniqueness, an approach there. Do you make many trips back to the Gulf, to the Middle East?
I actually visit the UK more frequently, where my mother's side of the family is. I haven't made it to the Middle East in, 10 years, but I think we're planning a trip for the end of this year.
Now, you've had projects in Kuwait. Were you just designing them at a distance, or how did that play out?
Yes, yes. And it was actually proof. So I've been anti-interior design moving into the online world. I think it just scares me, if I'm being honest. I like the face-to-face interaction. But we gave this a try, and we worked on a project, I'd say, digitally with Kuwait. And it is probably the strongest portfolio piece in our portfolio.
I'm trying to remember the details. It was a coffee shop?
Yes, a coffee shop. That's correct. Alert Coffee in Kuwait City.
Yeah, yes. Fabulous. Yeah. Now, you do something else unique with your Design It Forward program.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about this contest, about how long you've been doing it, and about what's in store this year.
Yeah, so Design It Forward started in 2016. It's basically stems from the phrase Pay It Forward. But we donate our interior design services to one local new or growing food and beverage business in the Valley. And it's our way of supporting young talent and giving them something they probably could not attain at that early of a stage in their business.
Right. The first winner was Freak Brothers Pizza.
Yes.
In the Churchill District. The second winner was Iconic Cocktail Co.
That's correct.
And then this is the third round.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I saw on your website that online applications will open early June.
Yes.
And you have a panel of judges. Talk a little bit about how this all plays out.
Yeah. So we're going into our third annual. So we are happy to make changes as we move along. But we learned last year that giving this to professionals in the industry to cast their vote and make the decision was a better direction than making a selection internally. So last year we had a panel of local celebrity judges, celebrity chefs, and food industry professionals. We had a graphic designer, a kitchen consultant, and they each had a really unique perspective. So I think we're going to keep on with that. But we were toying around with the idea of in-person presentations this year.
That would be a fun thing.
Yeah.
To do. It would make a great opportunity to also display on social media and other things. People
right.
could watch it on Instagram stories, playing out in real time, create
yeah.
a real buzz around it. And it's also a great way to give back something to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that important to you?
Well, when I think back to my first week, when I mentioned reaching out to everybody in the industry and really relying on my community to help me build my business, and you know, a week in, all the projects I attained was from that community. I wanted to thank them. A thank you card did not feel sufficient, so I felt that I should turn around and give the community what the community had given me.
Now, you and your husband live in Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
Your office is in Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
So you spend a lot, and you've had projects all over the valley from
yes.
the west to the east.
Yes.
And everywhere in between, it seems. Talk a little bit about what you see happening in, for example, downtown Glendale. There's
mm-hmm.
a sense of revitalization of that community. Is that something you're involved in or thinking about getting involved in? And what's your sense of it from where you sit?
Yeah, that's interesting. So luckily, as a designer, I get to learn about projects early on, and I'm able to pick up on little clues that tell me there's a trend coming along. Right now in downtown Glendale, which is really surprising, but also in a good way, there's a big vegan restaurant scene, which is fantastic for the West Valley. I think there's a lot of development going into Peoria. We learned this week, or I think it was last week, that Park West is introducing 5 local restaurants that, you know, already have operating businesses in the valley that are coming up there. So I see a lot of progress happening on that part of town. We all know Gilbert is busting at the seams. They're doing so well. So yeah, I think city's growing.
And you've had and continue to have involvement in Gilbert as well, right? You were involved in the design for the Thrive Co-working for Women
yes.
and Ticket Force. This is all in the same building, same ownership.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes.
And a rooftop bar situation.
That's
what's
correct.
What's happening with that?
Yes. So that is actually in the city right now being reviewed. So as soon as we get the drawings back, we start construction. But yes, it'll be the first rooftop bar in the downtown Gilbert area.
Same building or different location?
Same building.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the vision there, and how do you see yourself playing a role in something like the Downtown Heritage District, where
yes.
obviously there's many different interests and, you know, the, different business owners and the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
What's your role as designer in some of those emerging conversations?
Well, part of it was learning about what was currently working in the downtown area and what wasn't, and really capitalizing on that, but also introducing something relatively new that did not exist. And with this particular rooftop bar, we're looking at celebrating the Sonoran Desert, but in a very contemporary fashion. So, you know, we're turning to wilderness, and I'm losing the word right now. Can't think of it.
So something beyond just turquoise saguaros on painted
walls.
Oh,
yes, yes, kind of, yes. Yeah.
It sounds fascinating. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. Where do you see your business headed? I mean, this is a fast growth period, both for the Valley and
mm-hmm.
for you professionally.
Yes.
What's your vision for FJI?
Yes. So my vision is to be the world-class leader in food and beverage interiors. So if you have a bar, restaurant, and you're looking to create something that makes your jaw drop, then I'm the person to call.
Well, that's fabulous. And where do people learn more about your work? Where can they see the portfolio and learn more about these projects that you've been talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, sure. So our work and a little bit about us can be found on www.fji.design. But if you want more of a casual behind-the-scenes introduction to FJI, then Instagram's the place to be, and that's fji.design is the handle.
Yeah. You know, so many designers have embraced Instagram because it's a primarily visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
And yet one of the things that I think people really struggle with is finding the right balance between showing up and showing off. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a tendency to just want to put our polished, finished products, put our best selves, PR ourselves and our business. And in your industry in particular, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes work that most people wouldn't think is interesting,
yes,
or worth sharing or whatnot. How are you finding, I watched a few of your Instagram stories in preparing for this conversation. How are you finding that balance? Because clearly you're showing some behind the scenes office shenanigans.
Yes.
And also some of your process.
Yes.
Showing your work.
Yes.
As it's happening, not just the finished work.
Uh-huh.
How have you found Instagram and other online platforms as a vehicle for sharing about your process?
Yeah. So I think what it's done is given people perspective on our personalities more than anything. So yes, the work is there, but people want to work with people that they like and love. And that's an opportunity for us to show up and show them who we are in the most authentic way possible.
Well, that's fabulous. I love it very much. Dalla Alfueres, principal of FJI. You can visit their website at fji.design. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.